Long before Van Jones was dubbed the Green Job Czar of the Obama administration, he was a lawyer and an activist, working to create political and social change for African Americans. His organization, Color of Change, addressed racial inequities that became apparent during Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath. Jones then turned his attention to combating climate change and its disproportionate impact on the poor and communities of color. For him, green jobs were the way forward. When conservatives soured on his activist background, Jones resigned as the Green Jobs Advisor to the president. But he's continued to push for environmental justice through entrepreneurship. And that's what he was doing in Pittsburgh earlier this year. Today on the Allegheny Front, we present his speech at the University of Pittsburgh's Jonas Salk Symposium on Sustainability, where he spoke about how an idea for green jobs in Oakland, California, catapulted him into the national spotlight.
So I've met all these good, smart business people. They're creating companies that sell solar panels. They're creating companies that energy efficiency and weatherization. They're starting to invest in wind energy technology. All these great things. And I thought to myself, this green movement is also about green. It's about money. And these people are starting businesses. And I said, well, I wonder who they're going to hire. And I said, hold on a second now. You got all these kids in Oakland that need work. And you have all these new green companies that need workers. And then you got the most important work that needs to be done. And then you've got all these kids who right now are standing around on street corners getting in trouble. I said, what if you could connect the people who most need work to the work that most needs to be done? Maybe you could fight pollution and poverty at the same time. Maybe you could have these kids standing in front of my house getting on my nerves. On top of my house, put up solar panels. Or weatherizing my neighbor's house so she can save money on her energy bill. Or out here in the industrial Midwest, maybe building wind turbines. And this was just an epiphany to me. And I thought to myself, this idea is genius. This is an amazing idea. This is a great idea, and I could not wait to get home to explain it to my friends. And I got them all together at the community center. And I began explaining to them how amazing it could be if we could just get Oakland and Marin County together, and we could have green jobs, and we could help the earth. And when I got finished, I was moved to tears myself. I was so impressed. And my friends kind of sat there in Oakland looking at each other. And one of them kind of raised his hand. He says, when you say green jobs, you mean jobs with money? And I realized they had no idea what I was talking about. Went back to Marin. I started explaining the whole green jobs, not jails thing to them. And they were very enthusiastic about the green jobs part, but they couldn't understand what the jails had to do with it. And then I got depressed. And I spent years going around just trying to stitch together in my little community just enough of a coalition to try it. Just to try it. Long story short, we were able finally to get the Oakland City Council to create something called the Oakland Green Jobs Corps. Oakland Green Jobs Corps. Now, this is a feat. I'll tell you about two political feats, but this one is actually the most impressive because Oakland's city council has 7 organized factions and only 5 members. This is the most dysfunctional political body in the history of democracy. And we were able to get this little Green Jobs Corps approved. And it worked. We were able to get some young folks who had gotten in trouble or about to get in trouble trained And we were able to go to these solar companies and say, listen, you guys, you got the right policies in California now, you got the right product in California, you've got consumer demand, but how long has it taken you from order to implementation? 3 months, 6 months, 9 months? People who have got money and want the solar panels up are waiting 9 months after they paid you to get the solar panels on their house, because solar panels don't put themselves up. You gotta have workers. You gotta have people. I got people. And look, we didn't solve every problem in Oakland, but for those couple of dozen young people, we made a big difference. Now let me show you what happened. I made the mistake, which I don't encourage you to do, of hiring as my receptionist a young person. I know it's not PC to say this. So I started getting a note every other week from my much too young receptionist saying that someone named Nancy Pelosi was trying to reach me. I said, I don't have time to talk to Nancy Pelosi. I'm trying to change the world. I'm trying to make policy changes. I'm trying to get laws reformed. I don't have time to talk to some random person named Nancy Pelosi. About 2 months into this, I started to think to myself, I wonder, could the office of Nancy Pelosi have anything to do with the office of Nancy Pelosi, right across the bridge in San Francisco, who's just become the Speaker of the House, the third most powerful person in the U.S. government? Needless to say, it was, in fact, the office of Nancy Pelosi. And she thought the Green Jobs Corps was a really good idea. And she was trying to get me to go to Washington, D.C. to testify in front of some committees to see if we could spread that program nationally. Now, mind you, I had been fighting with the Oakland City Council to get $125,000 to start the Oakland Green Jobs Corps. And she includes in the Energy Bill 2007 something called the Green Jobs Act of 2007 for $125 million to spread the program around. And George W. Bush signed it. In fact, the only thing that George W. Bush and Pelosi agreed on the whole time they overlapped was my bill. Now, that was pretty amazing. So I wrote a book about it. And the book came out, it was a bestseller. And a guy in Illinois named Barack Obama read it. He won an election and had me help out his transition team as the entire global economy is falling apart. And they said, well, look, you know, we're going to have to put forward a stimulus bill really fast. I'm trying to get the economy going. We're in free fall. We're losing 800,000 jobs a month. That's as many jobs as you'd lose in a normal recession period. We're losing that many a month. We're headed for the Great Depression. We don't have time to pass a bunch of new laws, a bunch of new bills. What we got to do is take existing laws, existing bills, and put money through those. Has anybody got any ideas? I said, well, funny you should mention it. Because we just passed, and George W. Bush just signed this thing called the Green Jobs Act. And sure enough, they put $500 million behind it. And the president asked me to come and help oversee that. And when I got to the White House, thinking I'm getting there, going there to help oversee $500 million, I get my assignment. Turns out the overall stimulus bill, $787 billion, $80 billion of that is directed toward clean and energy, clean and green energy solutions like smart batteries, wind, solar. $80 billion, about eight different agencies and departments. They said, we want you to run that for us too. Thank you.
That was CNN Crossfire host and author Van Jones, addressing an audience in Pittsburgh earlier this year. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapple. This week, we're airing a special show featuring excerpts of Jones' speech, given on the 100th anniversary of the birth of Jonas Salk. The event was meant as a celebration of Salk's legacy of sustainability. You can learn more about it on our website, AlleghenyFront.org. Now we continue with Van Jones, talking about his own vision of sustainability. His first book was called The Green Collar Economy. The green jobs promised in Obama's early presidential years were folded into more palatable language of economic recovery during the recession. But Jones isn't afraid to call them like he sees them, starting with solar.
So now, I'm in a situation where we've got $80 billion to spend out, half a billion on the bill I came up with, but $80 billion total. Sitting here right now today, there are, according to the Department of Labor, 2.1 million green jobs in America right now. 2.1 million. Is that a lot or a little? Well, there's 80,000 coal miners in America, 80,000, who, by the way, are America's heroes. They risk their lives. They risk their lungs every day in this country to keep the lights cut on for the rest of us. Whatever you might think about big coal, those individual coal miners are heroes. And there's 80,000 of them, and if one of them loses a job, everybody screams and yells. Well, God bless them, but we also have 110,000 solar workers in America right now today, and 130,000 wind energy workers, and I can go down the list. So if those 80,000 coal mining jobs are important and precious, we should also be proud of those 2.1 million green jobs that have been created. So where does that leave us? Well, look, obviously, I got to the White House. Nobody ever criticized anything I did when I was in the White House, but some people noticed that I had been, in my 20s, a berserkly activist. And I decided to make that an issue, which I understand. And I decided to resign. So I left the White House. We got stopped in the Congress. And all that momentum that came out of that smart stimulus spending sort of plateaued a bit. It's still growing, it's still going, but it's not going anywhere near as fast as the professor would want to see it, or that the scientists say we got to get it going. But I have a special kind of optimism. I know that doing stuff at the local level can have big, big consequences if you do it right. And most people don't know that. I know it for sure. Look around you. There's not one thing that's ever happened in the world that we find admirable that didn't start off with somebody just like you in a place just like this. You would have never heard of Montgomery, Alabama, if a woman just like you or your friend named Rosa Parks hadn't decided, you know, I'm tired of getting pushed around. She wasn't specially anointed by anybody. She didn't have big degrees behind her name. Just a regular person. What can you do? What can you do? Number one, every building in this city can be improved to be more energy efficient. You say, well, who cares? Well, hold on a second now. Depending on the city, 40 to 50% of the wasted energy is not planes flying around or cars driving around, it's buildings. You spend most of your time in buildings with the lights on, the air's on, the TV's on, you're recharging your laptop, you're doing all this stuff. And 30% to 40% of all the energy is just being wasted because you know, the doors don't fit right or you don't have the right insulation. Well, if you get to fixing that, what happens? Well, this is everybody talks about solar, and I'm going to talk about energy efficiency, solar, and wind, and then I'll sit down. This campus and every building in this town, you could set up a revolving loan fund and really retrofit the whole city. And why is that possible? You say, we don't have any money. Well, hang on a second. Those energy efficiency dollars are the most hard-working dollars in the country. Why? You take somebody who might be unemployed. You give that person a dollar, and they stand up. That $1 just cut the unemployment rate. Now that person, as an energy efficiency worker, walks across the street over to your grandmother's house, which is wasting 30% of the energy, 40%. She's paying 40% too much every time. He or she goes in that house. He or she replaces the windows and the doors so they fit better with all the new high-performance materials. They blow in clean, non-toxic insulation. Maybe they replace an old boiler or something like that. Well, that same dollar that was used to cut unemployment is now just cut grandma's energy bill. That dollar's not done. Somewhere close by, there's a coal-fired power plant that's putting out 30% too much pollution because you wasted 30% too much energy at grandma's house. Well, that same dollar that cut that unemployment rate, that cut grandma's bill, just cut the pollution coming out of that smokestack. And that dollar's not done. Guess what? Just cut asthma. Now you just took inhalers out of little girls' and boys' pockets all across that town because of that one bill. And then guess what? If you structure it right, the money that grandma saves can be used to pay it back, and you can keep doing it again. And you turned wasted energy into wanted work. And you can do it over and over again. There are companies now that are doing this all over the country. They don't get the support or the attention. But that could be done right now. You could put people to work right now, cut asthma, cut people's energy bills right now. That's just one solution right here available to everybody. What else? Solar. People go, oh, well, we don't get enough sunshine around here for solar. In Germany, what is it, 30% of the energy now is from solar? You know, that little rural backwater of Germany that doesn't have any industry and doesn't have any modern lifestyle. 30% solar powered right now. Have you ever been to Germany? You know how sunny it is in Germany? Known for its beaches and bikinis. We're a sunnier country than Germany, and they're taking our technology and beating us to death with it. And the price of solar panels has come crashing down, partially because the Chinese have decided it's such a critical industry, they're flooding the global market with the cheap stuff to knock us out. But even if we knock out the solar panel makers, we can still install the stuff cheap. And why shouldn't we? Let me just say something about solar, and also about solar and poor people. I live in California. When I first got into this, I said, this makes no sense at all. Where do rich people live? Up in the hills with nice trees and shade and the babbling brooks and whatever, and solar panels. Where do poor people live in California? In the flatlands, where it is hot and the sun's beating down on black tar roofs. I said, this is just ridiculous. Why don't we put the solar panels where the sun is? For this, they call me a radical on the Furry Predator channel. I just said, I'm happy that the rich people in the shady hill houses have solar panels, but I would also like for these poor people who are down here with the sun beating on them to get something out of the deal. Because then, guess what? The energy company has to pay you. See? The sun's beating down your house all day. If it's a black tar roof, you got to pay the energy company. It's a solar panel there, guess what? You've got an asset. You're a little power plant you own called your house. And with something called net metering, you can sell that back. Now, people, again, the furry predator people call me a radical, but I think that's the most American thing you can do. Shouldn't you, as an American, have the freedom and the liberty to power your own house and sell the energy that you produce on your own property to anybody who wants to buy it on a public power grid? Why should the big utility companies have a monopoly on power and force you to pay their price, their way, their time, how they want it, and tell everybody else they have to stay out of it? Why can't we have everybody in America competing with each other to produce more energy, to sell more energy? People say, well, Van Jones, he's this left winger. I said, no, actually, I believe in free markets. I believe in free markets so much, I'd like to see one in the energy system. How about that? How about that?
We're listening to a speech by Van Jones, given at the University of Pittsburgh this fall. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapple. And you can hear more of our coverage of energy, from natural gas to renewables, at our website, alleghenyfront.org/energy. As you've heard, Jones is critical of bureaucracy, and the negative attitudes, he says, are blocking a move towards more green energy in the U.S. It gets even tougher when it comes to fracking, but his tone noticeably brightens as he talks about millennials and how this generation might spark the country's energy transition.
And then lastly, wind energy. Wind turbines. 8,000 finely machined parts in each one. As much steel as in 30 cars. They're the size of football fields. Why am I excited about wind turbines? Because you can put your automakers back to work building them. You can put your steel workers back to work building them. You're talking Boeing-level engineering in the sky. George W. Bush's Department of Energy said we have enough wind energy in our plain states to power the whole country with that and nothing else. That's not Barack Obama. That's not Van Jones. That's George W. Bush's Department of Energy. Before people turned this whole climate energy thing into a partisan thing, everybody was looking at it fair. Let's not forget, John McCain, Barack Obama ran against each other for president. One of them said, global warming is real, said it's caused by humans, said cap and trade will fix it, and we can get more jobs by fixing it than not. You know who said that? John McCain. That was John McCain's position 6 years ago, 2008. It used to be, it's very recent that this thing became so, when the Koch brothers and other people who have a lot of money from oil jumped in. But before they jumped in, both sides were looking at this thing fair, including George W. Bush. And I won't quote Obama administration figures. I quote George W. Bush on this wind energy. And the great thing about wind energy is it's so much better to build those turbines here. If you try to build those in China, you got to put them on boats and bring them over. You got to drive them down across the country. No, no, build them here. Build them here. And part of the reason I don't like the fracking stuff, besides the fact that it keeps us, you know, it's a new form of getting us addicted to fossil fuels, and it may be releasing too much methane, and. It undercut the price of wind. Wind was cost competitive with coal and natural gas, and was getting cheaper compared to coal and natural gas before fracking artificially collapsed the price of natural gas and has now really hurt our wind industry. At some point, I don't care how much fracking you do, there's just no more gas down there, and we're going to need those wind turbines, but now we delayed 20 years getting them, maybe. Some years are good years, some years are bad in politics. But tomorrow always comes. Tomorrow always comes. And those communities that have been pushing ahead and educating the young people, educating the leaders, getting their institutions like this to do the right thing, not the wrong thing, who've been getting their churches weatherized and solarized, who've been pushing along the whole time, when public policy changes, they'll be in a position to take better advantage. And tomorrow always comes. We won't stay this stuck on stupid forever. So in closing, you know, to the young people who are here, you have a tremendous opportunity. I got a little teary-eyed back there looking at that JFK quote. That was a heck of a generation. A heck of a generation. And they're a lot like you. That 60s generation. At the time, they were the biggest generation in American history. Everybody came home from the war after World War II, and they were happy to see each other. And suddenly you had a whole bunch of babies. And then when they got to be teenagers and young adults, they looked around. And they said, you told me liberty and justice for all, but we still discriminate against black folks in the South, and we don't like it. You told me liberty and justice for all, but women aren't really being given an equal chance. We don't like it. You told me to sing America the Beautiful, but we got so much pollution that the rivers are catching fire. We don't like it. You told me liberty and justice for all, but if you're a lesbian, if you're gay, you can't even express yourself. We don't like it. 1960, America was just boring, man. It was just boring. There was nothing happening. And by 1968, the year I was born, 1970, you'd had the Stonewall Rebellion for lesbians and gays. You had Earth Day for the environment. You had the Civil Rights Movement. You had the Women's Liberation Movement. What happened? Did we get a new constitution? You get a new country? No, you had a new generation. It was big, idealistic, believed in what they were told when they were young. And they changed this country in a decade. Changed it. And the whole world is still inspired by it. They sing We Shall Overcome all around the world, still to this day. Heck of a generation. Your generation is bigger than the baby boomers. There are more of you than there were of them. You're more diverse. You have the wisdom of every kind of human ever born, every faith, every color, every sexuality, every gender, every kind of human ever imagined is in your generation right now, and you mostly get along. You're a miracle in human history, and you're more connected than anybody's ever been. If you believe in things you're going to learn today, you can do something about it. And if you do, we will have America the Beautiful, and we will have liberty and justice for all. So thank you very much.
That was Van Jones, the author and TV host who spoke about green energy and community empowerment in Pittsburgh this past October. You can learn more about what Jones is up to these days at our website, alleghenyfront.org. And of course, he has a hashtag. It's Team Van.